Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Janna bala ba giri bar dhari ja gopi janna bala ba giri bar dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari So, welcome to Srimad Bhagavatam class. Today's text is Canto 11, Chapter 18, Verse 5. Continuing Lord Krishna's description of Varnashram Dharma with the last two ashrams, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritam. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devam Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayet Nashta Praesho Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatyutama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Agni Pakvam Samashniyat Kala Pakvam Ata Api Va Ulukala Ashma Kutta Va Danta Ulukhala Eva Va Agni Pakvam Samashniyat Kalapakvam atapiva. Ulukalashma kutova. Danto lukhala evava. Please chant. Agni pakvam samashniyad. Kala pakvam atapiva. Tanto ukala evava. Agni pakvam samashniyad. Kalam pakvam atapiva. Kutova. Evava. Agni. By fire. Made. Oh, pakvam. Made ready to eat. Samashniyat. One should eat. Kala, by time. Pakvam, right for eating. Ata, else. Api, indeed. Ba, or. Ulukala, with grinding mortar. Ashma, and stone. Kutaha, pulverized, ground up. Va, or. Danta, using the teeth. Ulukalaha, as a grinding mortar. Eva, indeed. Va, or alternatively. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Jai. One may eat foodstuffs prepared with fire, such as grains or fruits ripened by time. One may grind one's food with mortar and stone or with one's own teeth. Please repeat. One may eat foodstuffs prepared with fire, such as grains or fruits ripened by time. Or one may grind one's food with mortar and stone or with one's own teeth. Purport. In Vedic civilization, it is recommended that at the end of one's life, one should go to a holy place or forest for spiritual perfection. In sacred forests, one does not find restaurants, supermarkets, fast food chains, and so on. And thus one must eat simply, reducing sense gratification. Although in the Western countries people eat processed food, one living simply must himself separate and pulverize grains and other foods before eating. This is referred to here. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripasindubhyayeva cha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Well, the first thing I noticed about this verse that stood out to me was, did you notice a Sanskrit word that was kind of very, very similar to one of our English words? Well, you can use a grinding mortar to grind grains, or with one's own teeth, danta. Danta, yeah, dental, danta, dental, danta. So we can see that right off the bat here, Sanskrit is actually the oldest discovered language in the world. There is no older language that has ever been actually discovered in terms of actual evidence linguistically. There is speculation by scholars that Sanskrit emerged from something, a previous, a predecessor called Proto-Indo-European. But there is no evidence for that. It is pure speculation, hypothesis, etc. So that leaves Sanskrit as the oldest language in the world that has been discovered. So therefore, and of course we know through hearing the Shastra that this language was spoken since the beginning of the creation. Lord Brahma, he's the creator of this universe, and you know his first prayers were in Sanskrit. He said, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Radir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. He prayed to Krishna that through his severe austerities that he performed, he got the revelation of Lord Krishna. He got to see Lord Krishna face to face. Then he spoke his prayers, which glorified Krishna and also established many Vaishnava truths. Srila Prabhupada said that the Brahma Samhita contains all the truths of Vaishnava philosophy. So it's a very condensed summary. Lord Chaitanya discovered the manuscript when he was traveling, I believe, in South India. But he was traveling somewhere in India, and he found this manuscript, and he was overjoyed. And I've heard that there are 100 chapters, but he only found, you know, chapter 5. So just imagine all the other things that are in there. But we got this one chapter, and it starts, the first verse is, you know, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Krishna is the supreme controller, because there is no one superior to him. He has an eternal body, which is comprised of bliss and knowledge, and he is the supreme cause of all causes. So that is the same Supreme Lord who is speaking here in the Bhagavatam, describing the way that currently we're learning about how a person in the third spiritual order or ashram of life should live. This is going under the assumption that this, you know, ideal human being has spent 25 years as a brahmachari, humbly serving the spiritual master, possibly going to the grihastha ashram for 25 years, and then after, you know, maintaining one's family and having children and doing lots of giving lots of charity and so on, living as an ideal householder, then one takes on severe austerities to become detached from the sense gratification that they had become accustomed to in the previous ashram. So a few verses back, to give some context, now this verse says, talking about how one should eat as a vanaprastha in the retired order. And so I'll just roll back a few verses to give us some context. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who desires to adopt the third order of life, vanaprastha, should enter the forest with a peaceful mind, leaving his wife with his mature sons, or else taking her along with him. Having adopted the vanaprastha order of life, one should arrange one's sustenance by eating uncontaminated bulbs, roots, and fruits that grow in the forest. One may dress oneself with tree bark, grass, leaves, or animal skins. The vanaprastha should not groom the hair on his head, body, or face, should not manicure his nails, should not pass stool and urine at irregular times, and should not make a special endeavor for dental hygiene. There's that word dental again. I have a feeling we're going to talk about the teeth. He should be content to take a bath in water 3 times daily and should sleep on the ground. Thus engaged as a vanaprastha, one should execute penance during the hottest summer days by subjecting oneself to burning fires on 4 sides and the blazing sun overhead. During the rainy season, one should remain outside, subjecting oneself to torrents of rain. And in the freezing winter, one should remain submerged in water up to one's neck. And now today's verse. One may eat foodstuffs prepared with fire, such as grains, or fruits ripened by time. One may grind one's food with mortar and stone, or with one's own teeth. So, although it doesn't sound like, it sounds like there's a bit of a concession here, that you're actually allowed to use some tools. You can use stone tools, right? But there's no discussion of high technology. People that retire in America, you know, just to paint an opposite picture of what's happening in Kali Yuga, what happens? You know, your kids might be grown up, right? So we might be following the first part. Maybe the kids are taken care of somehow. And maybe they're off to college and, you know, situated, maybe even married. And then so mom and dad get in the RV. They get in a Winnebago or an Airstream or something, and then they barrel around the country looking for fun, searching for fun, stopping at many fast food places on the way and eating, you know, dead cow burgers, and maybe going to forests. Actually, at this time, people do go to national forests, you know. It's kind of like going to the forest, but it's a pale reflection. And do they subject themselves to excruciating austerities? No. They actually, you know, go to a Sam's Club or a Walmart, and they pull up their RV and they find all the hookups for electricity and for water, and, you know, and then they go shopping, right? And so they buy all kinds of processed foods, and then they, you know, might even be, you know, TV dinners. They just pop in the microwave for convenience on the road. Or maybe, you know, mom still wants to cook, right? But there's not going to be any question of really a mortar and pestle, a mortar and stone to grind grains. They'll be buying some grains that were produced by demons. Monsanto. People don't even really understand where grains come from. Here we're talking about food grains. What's the word for grain? Pakvam is used. And I guess we're just the words grains is sort of assumed. I'm not seeing a specific Sanskrit word for grains, but it's talking about using the teeth, things made ready to eat, with fire, you know, by grinding. So eating is, you know, everybody does it, but in different consciousness. So, you know, a person's going to the store and thinking, you know, the store is the source of my food. You know, I just go into the store and I have some money, and now it's digital money. We just swipe some kind of magnetic strip, or now it's a chip. It's all some kind of an electronic system to barter for some processed grains. Monsanto, for example, has decided that really to take the position of God, that any farmer that buys, for example, the Roundup, glyphosate is the chemical that Roundup is made with. Roundup is a weed killer. It's a very harmful and dangerous to human and animal health. And it's the main product made by Monsanto, who formerly was the creator of Agent Orange. They're the same company that made Agent Orange. So what they're doing is they, if a farmer signs up to get their pesticide, which is made primarily of glyphosate, and the shelf name is Roundup, then they also have to sign a contract which binds them to use only seeds provided by Monsanto. So Monsanto has patented seeds that they've developed through genetic modifications. And these seeds, when you plant them, the next year, the seeds that are created from that harvest are impotent, and they will not produce any yield whatsoever. So they are called, by critics, they are called terminator seeds, because they only last for one harvest season. And after that, the farmer then has to come back to Monsanto and pay, according to their contract, for seeds which have been manipulated like this. And they, because, yeah. And so many, and there's a famous incident regarding something called BT cotton. I forget what BT stands for, but it was Monsanto's brand of cotton. And so many farmers in India, who are, just real subsistence farmers, not rich agribusiness, concerns, but individual farmers, signed up, many illiterate, signed up for the Roundup and then realized they had to buy the BT cotton seeds because of the obligation in the contract. And they were told, of course, because of the progress that has been made through science, these chemicals and these special seeds, when used together, will increase your yield, will decrease losses due to the different types of vermin and insects that, may plunder, etc. And they were promised, this glorious yield. And what it turns out is that the yield was far less than promised, and less even than what the farmers were producing before on their own, without the so-called help of this company. So many farmers, because they went into bankruptcy and they started owing many debts, and debts even to Monsanto, they killed themselves. The incidence of farmers committing suicide became extraordinarily high. So you can read about that. But grains actually come from rains, as Krishna says, Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyo anasambhava. Grains are produced from the rain. Rain is given by God, represented by Lord Indra. Actually, Krishna sends forth and withholds the rain, but Krishna, delegates that authority to Lord Indra. And when does Indra give the rain? When jagya is performed, when sacrifice is performed, then the rain comes, and then the grains can grow, and then we can prepare the grains, offer the grains in sacrifice again, and then accept the remnants as prasadam, and then the cycle continues, and we have to keep the wheel turning. We always have to be offering back to God what God is giving us. Even if we only see God as nature, everybody knows that it's nice to be thankful and give back and be grateful and humble. So, but that's actually Krishna's system. With the performance of sacrifice, which was traditionally, fire sacrifices, depending on what age you're in, but traditionally fire sacrifices, then the bounty is given. And there's another verse in the Gita where Lord Krishna says that in the beginning of creation, The Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, saying, be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, for its performance will bestow upon you everything necessary for living happily in this world and attaining liberation to the next. So, you know, in modern civilization, we think, well, you know, Big Brother makes the grains, or Monsanto makes the grains, or, you know, Walmart or Tom Thumb, somehow they make the grains. They don't make the grains, they just harvest them. You know, they just receive them from farmers who've harvested them. And actually, the grains come from the earth as a combination of a seed, which receives rain and sunlight and soil. And these things are all given by God. So in the act of eating, you know, we should always, before we go to the stage of eating, we should always consider, where did this come from? Oh, did I make this? No. No, I should be thankful. Krishna made this. This has magically appeared before me in a way which is perfectly satisfying to this body that I have, which I also didn't make, right? And the air that I'm breathing, I didn't create that. Who did? Of course we know. Krishna says in the Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So, at a minimum, we should offer some sacrifice. And when we understand how the whole system is working, we'll start to think, oh, God is so great. And we'll gradually start to fall in love with Krishna and really give our hearts. But at least in the beginning of, you know, civilized life, one should be grateful for the gifts of nature that are produced under God's supervision. Offer those in return. Krishna says, you can offer me a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or water. I will accept it. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, you know, whatever austerities you perform, whatever charity you give away, that should be done as a sacrifice unto me. Interesting footnote about sacrifice. When I was, you know, younger, you know, kid, and there was still cowboy and Indian movies on television, right? And so all the kids would run around in a circle, you know, especially if you had just come back from the drugstore, the dime store, as they used to call it. Things were a dime at the time. And they called it the five and dime store, right? And so you'd get little fake guns with caps in them. And then you could also get, you know, headdresses of Native Americans with, you know, feathers in them that they made at, you know, Woolworths and stuff like that. And then you'd, like, put those all on, and then you'd, like, go around in a circle going, whoo, you know, and make what you thought were Native American Indian sounds. And you'd pretend to do a rain dance, and you'd make fun of these Native people who obviously didn't know anything. They were so ignorant and so benighted that they thought that you could run around in a circle, maybe light a fire, and say some weird sounds, and that would create rain. How silly. How ignorant, right? But the joke's on us, because that's actually how it works, folks. We actually need to perform in this age, Kali Kaler Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. In this age of Kali, the incarnation of Krishna is his holy name. Jagyai Sankirtana Prayar Yajantihi Sumeda Saha. In this age of Kali, intelligent persons perform the sacrifice of the congregational chanting of the Lord's holy name. And of course, we're not primarily doing this to create rain, but it is a rain dance. You can't say it's not a rain dance. It's a rain dance. There are also many instances where, you know, Srila Prabhupada's was traveling, and he and his disciples would perform kirtan in a place where it hadn't rained in a while, and rain would fall. And I think there's also many instances in the lives of Vaishnava saints where a certain saint would go to a place that had drought, and the Lord was so pleased by that person's presence there because they're constantly performing sacrifice that rain would come, right? So, foodstuffs are sacred because they come from God, like everything else. But especially we can really see that because of how much we hunger and we thirst, and we become, the body becomes miserable if we don't get these things that are necessary. And the universe is complete, and so Krishna is providing everything we need. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. In sacred forests, one does not find restaurants, supermarkets, fast food chains, and so on. Thus, one must eat simply, reducing sense gratification. Although in the Western countries, people eat processed food, one living simply must himself separate and pulverize the grains and other foods before eating. This is referred to here. Srila Prabhupada lists, food for civilized human beings as fruits, vegetables, grains, milk. They're not preparing it with any kind of consciousness of serving Krishna. They're all there to make money. And so the food is surcharged with that lust. Because why are they trying to make money? What's money for? Prabhupada says one, gets money so that they can satisfy sense gratification. And what is that sense gratification? We know all sinful activities, all activities that are completely in the mode of darkness, meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. That's where the money is going, that they're working to get. So what are they thinking about when they're cooking your food? It's something to worry about. I have personal experience, and this is, speaking for myself. I've certainly had occasion to eat very nice vegetarian food. They were very enthusiastic about it. The women would buy wheat and grind it up themselves and make flour. That was a woman's duty in Germany at the time. That way they wouldn't have to buy any grains prepared, by fruit of workers. So, that's not bad. It's a little bit difficult to go that extreme, but because eating is such an important part of life, every time one eats, one is getting some kind of association, and therefore, I've heard stories. I wish I had a Shastric reference, but I have heard stories that there are many brahmanas traditionally would cook for themselves. They would receive donations in the form of raw grains and vegetables and fruits, but no one could cook their meals. Only they could cook for themselves. And that was to ensure the purity of not only the ingredients, but the consciousness and the preparation and the offering. So we're so fortunate to, be close to a place where we have access to so much prasadam, because that truly does affect one's consciousness. It helps us think of Krishna. It helps us to chant better and so many things. So, I'm definitely adding a lot to what is actually here, but it's a short purport and verse. Another factor is that one must eat simply. In the purport, the commentators, Vidyananda Maharaj, Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, Dravida Prabhu, they are saying one must eat simply Because the idea is that, well, what is the purpose of this eating business? Well, I mean, why are we even sustaining our life to begin with? What is life for, right? Jivasya tattva jigyasa. Life is actually meant for self-realization, for inquiring about the absolute truth. That's why we've been given the facility of human consciousness to consider, where am I? There's a famous band, the Talking Heads, said, how did I get here? Where is my beautiful wife? Where is my beautiful car? Where does that road, where does that highway lead to, right? For those of us who grew up in the 80s. But actually, atato brahma jigyasa, therefore having achieved this human birth, one should inquire about the Supreme, atato brahma jigyasa. One should inquire into the Supreme Absolute Truth, because that is our purpose, to find that truth. Why all this eating anyway? Why are we so fixated on eating? Well, the pleasure of the tongue is supreme. And the tongue is the first sense by which all the other senses are fed. So, it's a drive for pleasure, for ananda. And just like I was saying in the beginning of class, Krishna is Satchidananda. And the devotees, like Srila Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was called Satchidananda. That's what we're meant to become, full of knowledge, bliss, eternally. But in order to get there, we have to begin with the tongue. The tongue is the most important and most voracious sense, as Jibe Pile Visay Sagare. So many points are made about the tongue. And so since we're talking about teeth and eating, we can transition to the tongue a little bit. One must eat simply, reducing sense gratification. Why? Why should I reduce sense gratification? I want to eat. I want to eat nicely. My tongue, my eyes and senses, my sense of smell, they see something really palatable, see a big feast. I just want to, you know, gorge myself and taste as much as I can and then even more to fill my belly, right? So, in the nectar of instruction, in the very first verse, Srila Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada, has given the instructions for neophyte devotees, of which I certainly consider myself at the very beginning, before neophyte. But these instructions, it is explained that Srila Rupa Goswami, the reason it's called the nectar of instruction, is that Srila Rupa Goswami condensed the entire path of devotional service into a few short verses. I think 11. 11 or 12 verses, yeah. The entire path from the beginning to Krishna prema and worship of Srimati Radharani and Radhakund in 11 quick verses, right? So where do we start? There we go. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam. Etan vegan. Okay, let's do the whole verse. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udarupashta vegam. Etan vegam, yo vishaheta dhira. Sarvam apimam prithivim sashishat. So I'll try the translation. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples where? All over the world. It seems so simple. That's all I have to do. I've always wanted to have lots of disciples all over the world. Just kidding. The tongue is that powerful. It's such a crux, it's such a fulcrum of our ability to control the rest of our senses and our mind. That so much stress is given from the very beginning that we have to control the tongue. Anybody who first remembers the time when they first joined the Hare Krishna temple, right? Those beginning blissful days of realizing how wonderful this is.
Everything was about the tongue. A lot of chanting, a lot of, you know, reading out loud to each other of Vedic scriptures, Srila Prabhupada's ecstatic purports, and chanting, you know, out loud, chanting to oneself, and then prasadam time, right? One time, and of course, Prabhupada says in the beginning, you know, when you first discover Krishna consciousness, you've been used to eating fast food and supermarkets and restaurants and so on. So naturally, there's kind of a transitional period. And he said, you know, one should take a new person in Krishna consciousness should take so much prasadam that they waddle like a duck, right? For 6 months, he said. For 6 months, they should take so much prasadam that they waddle like a duck. You know, just to become purified from all the nonsense eating that has happened in the past, right? So I followed that instructions for, I think, for more like, you know, 25 years. But then you're supposed to actually, after that, you're supposed to actually eat simply and control the tongue. So Prabhupada says that, you know, in the name of prasadam, one should not therefore, you know, overeat or become too irregular eating 5-6 times a day, right? There should be some regulation. Prasadam should be taken at regular times, you know, maybe 3 times a day, maybe 2 times, depending on a person's bodily constitution. And there's no need to overstuff, right? Of course, you know, when we're young and in so many instances we do this. And there are also feast days. And those days, you know, there's some overriding mercy from Lord Chaitanya to go ahead and take to your full satisfaction, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said. But this is not, you know, this is the exception, it's not the rule. The rule is that when we see in Bhagavad Gita, what is the characteristics of a devotee? They don't eat too much. They don't eat very much. It's listed as one of the characteristics of a pure devotee. They eat very little. And it doesn't mean you're starving yourself. It just means that you're eating to keep, you know, your body and soul together, happy, healthy, for the purpose of inquiry into the absolute truth. We have a lot of reading to do. How many of us have read all of Srila Prabhupada's books? I know I haven't yet. And I certainly have had time. So if you eat more, it makes you sleep more, that's less reading time. And before we, you know, leave our bodies, we should definitely try to finish all of Srila Prabhupada's books a few times. So I think I'm drifting off point now. Lord Krishna is stressing eating simply, so much so that one may either chew the raw grains found in the forest, or, you know, may have a concession of, you know, grinding with a mortar and stone. After all, he did say that we're not supposed to take care of our teeth, right? So maybe you don't have so many teeth. Maybe you need a stone grinder at this stage of life. But the whole point is, at the end of one's life especially, is to focus on Krishna consciousness, because death is coming. And it's important at the time of death, the actual goal of life is to ante narayana smriti, remember the Lord at the time of death. You know, we know the famous story of Ajamil, and he had, you know, he started his life as a pukka brahmin, and then he, through bad association, he fell down and was maintaining a woman who was a prostitute, and he had many, many children. And he forgot all about his duties and forgot all about Krishna. But then at the end of his life, just calling out for his son Narayan and having said his son's name so many times without thinking it was the Lord's name. He said at the end of his life, he just said Narayan once. So the correction is, Srila Prabhupada has said that he only said Narayan once, which is, it's the great power of the holy name of the Lord, that he became free from all his past sins. and so purified that he was, you know, eligible to go back to Godhead. So that's the point of human life. Sometimes we forget. So the Bhagavatam is always here to remind us. I'm forgetting constantly. And so therefore, I do try to hear as much as possible. Sometimes it sounds like there's some old man and he's really sort of like mean and he's got rules for us. He's got lots of rules that he wants us to follow. And he's, you know, some kind of a, you know, taskmaster. Probably not very happy himself, right? And he wants us to follow all these rules just because he's spiteful, right? That's not Krishna. That's some other person that you're talking about in that case. Lord Krishna is Satchidananda. He's performing his pastimes with his devotees in his blissful rasas with so many different devotees in infinite varieties of loving exchanges. And singing and dancing and sharing foods. And we could have that too. But we have to follow a few rules in order to become eligible to taste the actual nectar that's in the holy name. The holy name is verse, I think, 6 or 7 in the Nectar of Instruction while we're on the topic. Another thing to do with our tongue, chanting. Okay, eating, you got to do it, fine. Take prasadam, it's definitely, you don't lose your connection with Krishna while taking prasadam. But chanting is the supreme goal of life. And to chant purely and to get a taste, which is actually in the holy name, to taste the nectar, you know, we have to give up our offensive mentalities, give up our enjoying spirit, the sense of Ishvaraham, aham, bhogi. We have to give up the controlling and enjoying mentality. And in that way, we'll taste the supreme nectar, amrit, the deathless nectar, the highest possible taste. And in that way, we can, you know, progress in spiritual life. And achieve the goal of human life, which is to attain pure love of Godhead. And then whether we go back to Godhead or don't go back to Godhead, are we going to care? I don't think we're going to care. Devotees who have achieved pure devotional service to Krishna don't want liberation. They don't even want to be freed from the miseries of the material world. They just want pure service. So how sweet must that holy name be when one can chant that the pure holy name? So I'll just read the verse again. Agni pakvam samashniyat kala pakvam atapiva ulukalasmakutova danto lukala evava. One may eat foodstuffs prepared with fire, such as grains, or fruits ripened by time. One may grind one's food with mortar and stone, or with one's own teeth. And I'll end there. Comments? Okay, I'm going to repeat that. Bhakti Maggi is saying that when Srila Prabhupada was invited to people's homes and they offered him food, he would only accept the fruit. Normally he wouldn't eat the grains. Interesting. Yeah, I believe so. So I'll repeat. A brahmachari was distributing books. And some, you know, good-hearted people wanted to reciprocate. Maybe they didn't have a donation, so they gave him a bunch of cookies. Brahmachari just held the cookies. He wasn't planning on eating them. But does the person get benefit? And I think that's the point. Yes, I think because whatever you offer with your heart, Krishna's accepting the love. He's not accepting the actual item, is he? Does Krishna need to eat, grains? You know, he's completely spiritual. Does he hanker for something like material in the material world? No. But he's actually wanting the exchange of love. So I would say that's accepted, you know. And it's also not like they know any different. They're doing the best thing they know. They didn't have any money, so I'm going to give cookies. Aren't cookies the best thing? I'm going to give you some cookies, right? So, and I know that, Duryodhana was, sort of the usurper of the kingdom, and he had all the resources at his disposal and offered Krishna a gigantic feast, right? Probably thousands of preparations. And Lord Krishna declined that offer and went to the house of his pure devotee, Vidura. And he was being offered the skins of the banana because in ecstasy, the devotee offering was not paying attention. They were in ecstasy of love. So Krishna just ate the banana peels, accepted them. Anything else? Okay. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.